This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Niplex of water. Meanwhile, the sins of Fukushima are washing up on our shores. And funnily enough, Americans are more exercised about that, it seems, than they were perhaps about the incident at Fukushima in the first place. Funny how that works, isn't it? Perhaps it's got something to do with American exceptionalism. First, though, the National Weather Service has this for us. There is a less than 50-50 chance of rain today, mainly afternoon. Highs around 53 tonight. Same thing. Patchy fog around midnight with a low around 47. And for tomorrow, we might see a dash of rain, but probably not till the afternoon. Otherwise, overcast skies with a high near 58 and an overnight low around 48. And the alternative forecast for today is a new flower moon in Aquarius. 28 days, of course. The synodic forecast suggests leafy vegetables and annuals that produce above ground. Actually, sowing them may not be necessary. This is a prime time of year for foraging. Everything that you might want to put in a salad or a soup pot is coming up right now, and it is at its very best. Do not forget that nettles, gather them with gloves, of course, and use a bag. But once you've stewed them up, you can eat them as spinach or you can make a tea. And this is the best time of year to do that. Of course, coinciding with the appearance of, wait for it, nettles, of course. Biodynamic forecasts, biodynamicists point out with the moon in Aquarius, it's an air sign, and they also concur to sowing flowering plants is something that you might want to consider right now. Make sure that you get some kind of cover crop in there that will outcompete the weeds, which will be soon on their way. The sidereal forecast, again, moon in Aquarius. The sidereal people, though, say that it's dry and a barren time, and garden maintenance is what is called for. And that's it for both conventional and alternative forecasts. We want to move straight into news from around Cascadia. It's still apparently up to the average citizen to try and as best we can to keep the medical insurance industry honest. Bribery, of course, is sick. But Regent's Blue Cross Blue Shield is too big to nail for its crimes against humanity. The Blue Bombers attempting to coerce ambulatory surgery centers to sign their insurance contracts by sending the checks to the patients. That leaves it to the center to collect the payments. At times, those checks amount to $50,000. That could... $50,000 says a lot of get well soon. Furthermore, up to 3% of the patients never pay the bill anyway, requiring the surgery centers to send those people to collections agencies. In other instances, Regents has sent the check to the person holding the insurance card, which may not even be the patient. That happened to a University of Oregon student who was sent to a collection agency after her father, living in New York, received the payment for the surgery without any written notice of what the check was for, except saying that the student could log onto a website to learn more. Checks have also gone to ex-husbands who pocket the money intended for their ex-wives' surgeries. But Senator Ellen Bates is a Democrat from Medford, sponsored Senate Bill 366, which would prohibit insurers from sending such checks to patients and instead route them directly to the physicians who provided the care. The practice of sending checks directly to patients is illegal in California and several other states. And so we want to say, go Ellen Bates, Democrat of Medford. Let's try to get something passed to protect ourselves once again from Regent's Blue Cross, Blue Shield. And we have a couple of appointments to the Port Commission in Coos Bay, which could affect the future of the West Coast. And I do not say that lightly. The appointments are dangerous, and we have actually until tomorrow to to register our opposition to them. I would refer listeners' attention to the Citizens Against LNG, and we'll see where that goes. It's very rare that, as we all know too well, that public input has any success in these matters. But simply hearing from the voting public, it can open up eyes in Salem and in some cases even make people think twice about what they're wading into. The Jordan Cove LNG operation is alive and well. And trust me, the Pacific Connector Pipeline, that's a 36-inch pipe that will run through prime, pristine Oregon Cascadian wilderness areas, making its way to California, and and that state's insatiable appetite for energy. We are very often hypnotized by the massive headlines on, of course, fracking, and it deserves the headlines, and on the Keystone XL, and of course that deserves headlines, but it bears considering that right here in Cascadia, where we live, the LNG specter is not dead. Redwood Landing was a huge victory. Warrington is still in the works, but down in Coos Bay, Jordan Cove is still in play. And you might take a look at Citizens Against LNG. They're having a little trouble with that website right now, but it should be up and running by a couple of days, certainly by midweek. Leaving that aside, another thing that's showing up on the West Coast, of course, and I do not mean giant concrete docks or debris of the sort one might stub one's toe on the beach. There's a lot more washing in from Fukushima that we don't see or smell or taste or feel. And that's going to affect us in the long term. A lot of people are exercised about it. They should be. And we should, though, look at the Fukushima disaster, as a disaster for all of us globally, and not just for Japan, and not just for those who are sickened by the radioactive debris and the radiation, of course, that is reaching our shores. Perhaps if we had thought about that at the time and done more to persuade governments worldwide to abandon the foolhardy idea of generating energy through nuclear energy, perhaps we would also, of course, not be facing the hazards of Hanford and a great many other situations. Whereas San Onofre, the reactor there on the California coast, on a fault line, on the beach, is one of our last chances, of course, to oppose the reauthorization, re-upping the contract for that particular reactor, which is ancient and is down right now. One of those reactors at San Onofre is down, and we're hoping to keep it that way for future generations. There are numerous reactors around the country which are well past the 20-year limit on inspections because they are too hot to inspect. We're going to try to get Harvey Wasserman with Solartopia on the line. Harvey joined us last week to talk about some of these points, but as we start considering the anniversary of the Fukushima disaster, it certainly would behoove us to take a long, hard look at our own domestic nuclear industry and reevaluate what kind of risks we were willing to accept in exchange for what sort of rewards. Thyroid abnormalities have now been confirmed among tens of thousands of children downwind from Fukushima, and they are the first clear sign of the unfolding radioactive tragedy that's right on our doorstep. 2 years after Fukushima exploded, three still smoldering reactors are sitting there as a reminder that nuclear power industry repeatedly told the world that this would never happen. 72 years after the nuclear weapons industry began creating these things, untold quantities of deadly waste still leak at Hanford and at commercial reactor sites everywhere around the world. No solution in sight, no viable storage options out there. Radiation can be slow to cause cancer, it can take decades to kill you, but children, it can suffer very, very swiftly. Their cells grow faster than adults, and smaller bodies, of course, are more vulnerable. With the embryo and the fetus, there can never be a safe dose of radiation. No dose of radiation is too small to have a human impact. Let me just say that again. No dose of radiation is too small to have a human impact, despite the claims of the industry that, sure, we can live with this. Last month, the Fukushima Prefecture Health Management Survey acknowledged a horrifying plague of thyroid abnormalities. Thus far, this has afflicted more than 40% of the children studied. And it was a big study. The sample, the survey sample was close to 100,000. So some nearly 40,000 children are already suffering the results of our mistakes. The thyroid abnormality severely impacts a wide range of developmental realities, both physical and mental development. And on that note, hopefully we'll have Harvey Wasserman joining us to flesh that out a little bit more. Indeed, Harvey knows a whole lot more about that than do I, though all of us are going to be we're going to be faced with them with a fast course in the diseases that are brought by events like what happened at Fukushima. Cascade Forest Defenders is in Oregon, and all of their other allies are facing a bill that would create a felony out of peaceful protest tactics. When it comes to the fight for old-growth forests in the state of Oregon, Cascadia Forest Defenders have recently been winning a few. The fight for the Elliott State Forest, of course, but right now, What we are facing here, because perhaps of the success of many of these campaigns, we are now facing the possible felony charges for tree sits, for blockading timber logging roads, for any type of direct action taking place in the forests. To wrap that up on a final note, Pakistan is building a gas pipeline to Iran. This has come out just this morning, and the U.S. is none too pleased with that. There's enough trouble already in the region, and this, of course, is just yet one more a blow to the almighty ego of the empire. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, March 11th, 2013, Carlos Chavez engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. As the world's human population continues to grow logarithmically, it is pushing out other life forms and endangering biodiversity around the world. However, it's not just a simple equation of more people means less wildlife. This morning, we're going to talk with veteran wildlife biologist and environmental planner Leanne Kolonkiewicz about a number of factors that come into play that are driving species around the world toward extinction. Leanne is the author of an article, Overpopulation versus Biodiversity: How a Plethora of People Produces a Paucity of Wildlife, included in Life on the Brink, a new book about environmental impacts of overpopulation. Leanne, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for having me back. I think I was on here a few years ago.
And happily not on this show. You've been on KBOO, though, I'm sure. First of all, I want to compliment you on this, the subtitle of your article, How a Plethora of People Produces a Paucity of Wildlife.
I've had to explain what a couple of those words mean, as well as nurse some people through the alliteration.
I love the alliteration, but also I think that it kind of sets up the equation, but then you, in your article, go on to show that it's a lot more complicated than just more people equals less wildlife, or people in developed countries like the United States are the primary cause of the loss of biodiversity around the world. So let's first start by peeling back some of the superficial generalities that have come up with this debate around the difficulties of balancing wildlife and biodiversity with increasing population of human beings, and look at what is really happening beneath the surface.
Yeah, well, one superficiality would be that the number of people has a direct and a corresponding impact on biodiversity. That is, that there's a proportionate relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to be the case. Sometimes it is, as in the case that I cite where, as human beings have spread throughout the world, peopling the planet, there has been pretty much a corresponding decrease in biodiversity, a tremendous spike in extinctions, changing habitats as a result of people altering those habitats to survive. So if you're talking about hunter-gatherers,